Welcome back to the Heat Check Podcast Live. It is Tuesday, June 10th, 2025, and I am your host, Chris Patrick. My goodness, joined this evening by my co-host, Mr. VSP Tallman. Little bit of a clunky start as we are without our main producer and typical first co-host. Maybe we're the co-host, Tallman. Maybe that's the problem.
You might be right.
That could be it. Michael Benjamin, he is not with us tonight. He is actually out on the East Coast, I think presently at a Red Sox game. So we're missing his presence, but hope he's having a good time back East as he visits a couple sites out there. I expect he'll tell us all about it when he gets back. But we're here, baby. We're going to talk about the Suns' new head coach, Jordan Ott. He was introduced today at a very lovely press conference. Some concerning news from Matt Ishbia for his plans for the Suns moving forward. But heavily, this episode of the Heat Check Podcast Live will be about your Arizona Diamondbacks. This is our mid-season review. Tallman and I are going to talk about the present, the past, the future, and everything in between. So buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride. First, I would like it too, if you would please like and subscribe right here on our YouTube channel, Valley Sports Plug. Make sure you ring that notification bell so you can find out when we're going live. You can also follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, and so much more. You can find our link tree in the description below, and that'll get you where you need to go. Tell a friend, tell a hater, tell your mom, tell your dad, and you know, good Father's Day gift, a new subscription to a brand new podcast. I'm sorry, I'm already getting derailed here. But Tallman, how are you doing, man? I introduced you, but didn't ask you how you're doing.
Oh, that's just fine, Christopher. Doing good, trying to stay cool. I know I'm jealous of Mike right now. He got to go see Fenway Park. You said I think that game's over because I think it's 10 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, it is getting pretty late out there. Huh?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
He's probably not at Fenway anymore.
No, he's definitely not. But you sent us that video, man. That's a bucket list place for any baseball fan. I think that probably Wrigley. You went to Yankee Stadium, though, but that new Yankee Stadium.
Right? The new Yankee, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Mike's doing a little better than us tonight. We have to sit here and talk about mostly the Diamondbacks, which it's been rough lately.
three to one. And that video he sent us, it looked like it was like overcast. Looked real nice. It's like early summer, so it can't be too hot.
Do you see how many people were there on a Tuesday night?
Yeah. Oh, it looked crazy. I mean, what else is there to do in Boston, though?
Yeah, but it's the fandom over there for baseball. Their baseball team is just – well, they have a lot more history, so, you know, it makes sense that Chase Field isn't packed to the brim on a Tuesday night.
They probably don't have to worry as much about having other fans in their building, unless like a Yankees game. I'm sure the Yankees traveled down there to.
Oh, I'd be scared to go to that stadium if I was a Yankees fan.
Right.
Follow you to your car.
Yeah. Into the harbor. You took a wrong turn or something. That was a terrible Boston accent. All right, Tallman, let's get the not so fun story out of the way first. I mean, I guess it depends on who you're asking, but the Phoenix Suns, like I mentioned, introduced their new head coach today, Mr. Jordan Ott, and he said, "I've earned the right to be here. I've spent 20 years of working as hard as I possibly can to be here in this spot." Every time I've tried to read that, I struggle. It's a very interesting wording. But basically, Jordan Ott saying he deserves to be the head coach. He's worked really hard for 20 years, even though he's only 25. So I don't know when he started working hard to become a head coach. But for those of you who haven't heard or don't know, Jordan Ott was most recently an assistant for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was a video coordinator, I believe, for another organization, but I'm not 100% sure who. The news last week, I think last Monday, was that it was narrowed down to two candidates. It was Jordan Ott and Johnny Bryant. And Mike and I had discussed this a little bit last week on Past the Outlet. And it's funny, I actually meant to cue it up, but if you go back to the very end of that video and Mike asked me if I had any final thoughts, I said, yeah, I'm going to have a great time talking with VSP Tallman about the Suns hiring Jordan Ott. And we both moaned and groaned and laughed and ha ha, because on paper, Johnny Bryant's probably the better candidate, at least from a fan perspective, obviously not knowing really too much about either of these guys personally or their work ethic or their philosophy or anything like that. Just resume wise, I think Johnny Bryant had the better resume. Clearly Matt Ishbia and whoever else was involved in this decision-making process. I'm guessing, help me out here, Tallman, who's the new GM again? Brian Gregory.
Yeah.
So he was obviously him and Josh Bartlestein, I think, kind of spearheaded it. I know obviously Matt Ishbia probably had a sign off on it, but Matt Ishbia was going to sign off on any head coach hire that went to Michigan State. Am I right?
Oh, for sure. No doubt about it. And that's just, all right, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know, you know, anything about any assistant coaches in the NBA, because I don't, right? I'm not the basketball guy like you and Mike are. But it's just comical at this point. Like the whole Brian Gregory thing with the Michigan State ties, and then, you know, here you go with Jordan Ott. And I don't want to – I mean, you got to give these guys a chance. And, I mean, we called it from the get-go where it was, you know, they're not going to go out and hire another big-name established coach and pay him, you know, all that money just to come fire him in 1 year. Like, so I'm a little more positive about this approach, because obviously Jordan Ott's going to have some time, right? He's not going to be, I know they're making all the jokes on ESPN where, you know, hopefully he rents a house and doesn't buy a house in Phoenix, but I don't envision that happening. It's like with what the new inexperienced GM is going to have is coming into with all these huge decisions. What are you going to do with Beal? You got to trade Kevin Durant. You know, how are you going to rebuild when you have all this, not rebuild, sorry, how are you going to retool this roster when you have all this pressure coming down from this owner, Matt Ishbia? So with the huge plate for that, and then Jordan Ott coming in with a little bit of experience that he has being a head coach, it's like you got to give him more of a runway. You can't fire him after one season. You got to be more patient with this guy. So that's, I guess, a positive approach with this. But let's just hope he doesn't turn into Jordan Knott and he figures out how to. That was my.
I see what you did there.
My terrible dad.
I see what you did there
for the night. But it's hard not to look at it like he got hired because he has the Michigan State ties, which is, it's just ridiculous. Because I think he was the video coordinator at Michigan State, right, for like five years. I think it was. So obviously, you're not going to go make this. Obviously, he took a next step. He worked towards it. Maybe some of his quote is true where, you know, he definitely earned it, right? You know, so it's not like you're just hiring some random video coordinator to be your head coach. He's got the experience, I guess, but the whole Bryant, where it's just at the 11th hour, it's like, did the Knicks just swoop in and steal our top candidate? You know, after we were going to cast this very wide and vast net and take our time because the Phoenix Suns head coach position was the only open head coaching job. And I don't think anyone expected, was it Tom Thibodeau, right? Is it
Thibodeau.
Thibodeau.
I think they call him Tibbs.
But it's Thibodeau. But Thibodeau. I mean, no one really expected to see that happen. I mean, he's been, you know, he's very productive in New York. But I mean, if that would just, and they're never going to come out and say that Bryant was the number one guy and that, you know, the Suns just got totally screwed over. With if Bryant was their top candidate and they just had a pity hire for Ott because they had nobody else, those were their top two, that would just be – that's what it feels like to me. But we're never going to know that for sure.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like there's a lot of things that I think are just bad optically about it. You know, the fact that not necessarily the fact that they took so long to make a decision, because they did have that luxury, because at the time no other team was in search of a head coach. I forget his name, but the Nuggets interim coach was, they agreed that he was going to continue on and be the coach. Everyone else had already signed or re-signed their coach. So within that, they also had stated that, or we knew through the interview process and what had been reported, that they were going with a first-time head coach. They were only interviewing assistants, at least like the list of 14 that they had. And of those 14, I know two of them were Michigan State guys, which people were already like kind of on edge about. So come to find out that when they narrow it down to two, one of those guys is still on there. I think if you polled Suns fans who they wanted, they would have said Johnny Bryant. Who they thought it was going to be, I think we knew it was going to be Jordan Ott. And it's just for that Michigan State tie. And it's the optics for me. And Mike and I had talked about that as well. Tallman, I don't know about Michigan State, but I did see here that he was the video coordinator for the Atlanta Hawks from 2013 to 2016. He was on Steve Nash's staff with the Brooklyn Nets. He was an assistant there from 2016 to 2022, Lakers assistant coach from 22 to 24, and then just the 1 year with the Cavaliers as an assistant. So he's got, I mean, at least a pretty diverse history of work experience. Has probably worked for a handful, if not maybe two handfuls, of head coaches and different coaching styles. So with that, you can kind of be a sponge and you can absorb what you like about what one coach does, what, you know, what you don't like about how another coach approaches the game. And now is his opportunity to put everything he's absorbed and be his own head coach. So I totally agree with you, though. It's not a 1 year proposition. You got to give him at least two, if not all 4 years, unless something just completely fully implodes, because there's no expectations of this team to be a championship contender within the next 2-3 years. I mean, and that's the low end generous estimate of us being out of a championship window. It'd be very impressive if we could bounce back within 3 to 5 years to being a contender once again. But you do want to see us at least making strides year over year and hopefully at least get into the playoffs. I think Michael Benjamin said that his hope was that they get to a spot in the next year or two where they're at least winning the first round of a playoff series and then making it to the second round. And then, you know, that's a good enough place to hang your hat, which is so sad because just 4 years ago we were playing in the NBA finals with a team that was really strong and really talented, and the moves that we made were supposed to only make us better, and somehow it made us worse to where we didn't even make the playoffs this last year. It's truly pathetic. I absolutely fucking hate it, but alas, here we are. And you know, I agree, you can't. I saw a lot of people saying like, oh, unlike some Suns fans, I don't want him to fail. I want him to succeed. And I had to quickly point out, no, I haven't heard anyone say they want him to fail. I just heard a lot of people express doubt that he will succeed. There's a big difference. I think we all want him to do well. We hope he does well, but the doubt is very strong. And until they start playing games, that doubt is going to remain, unfortunately. There's nothing he's going to be able to say in a press conference or an interview that's going to change my mind right now. I mean, at the end of the day, he's not going anywhere. You know, he's got Brian Gregory, he's got Josh Bartlestein, he's got Matt Ishbia. They all support him. It'll be curious to see what the players think about him. There was news or reports, I guess, that Devin Booker had signed off on it. So Devin Booker was cool with his hire. I imagine he probably would have been cool with Johnny Bryant too. But
yeah, he was absolutely in that conversation. Come on. And then Steve Nash had, I think, some glowing stuff to say about Jordan Ott. But I mean, just touching on what you said about the fans wanting him to, you know, wanting both of them to fail, right? Even throw the general manager in there. I mean, why? Like you said, they're not going anywhere. You got to give him a chance, right? I mean, but you have doubts, obviously. I mean, right now, I don't envy either of those guys. You know, the situation that they just, you know, got hired into, that they've agreed to be a part of, that's crazy. I mean, it's the least sexy position or team to become the head coach of. I mean, you have so many hurdles to get over, and then you're handcuffed in so many ways where you're going to be staring at mediocrity for the next at least two seasons. I mean, you know, Mike being, you know, very optimistic with at least in 1 to 2 seasons being able to, you know, win a first series in the playoffs. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't think I know we're supposed to touch on this really quick, but
right.
But I think the next best, you know, Suns team that we see is not going to have Devin Booker on it. I think it's going to be a completely new cast. And I'm kind of within your timeline where you're thinking, hey, maybe in 5 years, this team will be ready to do that championship run again. But it's, I mean, shit, you had Charles Barkley on 98.7 today saying they need to trade Booker and just stop trying to fight the rebuild and just do it already, because you're just prolonging the inevitable. Like, just get it done. What the hell? Granted, I'm not in that camp, though, to get rid of Book, because then you're going to have downtown Phoenix is going to look like downtown LA right now. People are going to be, the Suns fans are going to be rioting. They're going to be upset. And I totally get why, because he's been the consistent through so many dark years where it's like, you can't get rid of the face, the absolute, no doubt about it, the face of the franchise for the last 10 years. It's like, you know, but maybe at what point do you have to start looking at the future? And it's, like I said, I don't envy those two guys coming in and Gregory or Ott, because it's not going to be an easy job, which the doubt comes in. for a very difficult job, don't you want the most experienced candidate?
That would have been my thought, especially like you're saying, if you're not breaking it down and doing a full rebuild, why not bring in a coach with a little more experience, a little more pedigree? And that is really hard to come to terms with for me personally, and I'm sure a lot of Suns fans, is that what might be in the best interest for the Suns, it might be to trade Devin Booker and get off of him and get back, you know, the best return that you possibly can. And who is Christian calling a nerd? I know he's not talking to us. I know he's not talking to us.
Oh, he's definitely talking to us.
And hope you're having fun down in the South out there. Hope we see you soon, man. We got a football draft coming up in a couple months, so hope you can get the lead for that. But back to the Suns. They might have to move on from Booker. But before we even have those conversations, there are two other pieces that need to be moved, and that's going to be Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal. If they can't move Bradley Beal, we're in a world of hurt. And at that point, if you can't move Bradley Beal and you're going to have him for the next 2 years making $45 to $50 million, you might just need to move Devin Booker and get back some draft capital, get a young player. And it sucks, I know, because Devin Booker is has almost all the franchise records. I think he's the highest scoring. He's been here like one of the longest tenured sons. I think he is the longest tenured son of my lifetime. So, but just a very tough pill to swallow. Like you said, we're only touching on this for a second. So I'm sure we'll deep dive the Kevin Durant trades. There's really not much to report there. It looks like he's going to the Spurs. We'll probably get Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sochan, and the 14th pick from them, or some similar package. But a lot of teams are showing interest, which I guess is good. Unfortunately, not hearing anything about them being able to offload Beal. Tallman, the last thing I did want to talk about the Suns, though, and we'll be really quick on this, just very concerning. Matt Ishbia vows to be extremely active in front office decisions going forward, per report. I guess he put out some kind of memo to all of the staff, basically saying that he's going to be involved in every single decision and he's going to be very involved with the team, which I thought he was already doing. So the fact that he's saying he's going to be more involved and kind of doubling down, it's like,
I'm Matt Ishbia and I'm going to be more involved.
Oh man, why are you making fun of everyone's appearance? Poor Jordan Ott. He said he looked like he was 25. I mean, that's not a flattering photo though of Matt Ishbia, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, they caught him like mid-sentence or something. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not... I'm making fun of him. I'm making fun.
You with that voice, you most definitely were. But I'm all about it. I'm here. I'm supportive of that decision you just made there. What the hell? I mean, what is this going to look like? I mean, he was already meddling. He was already very involved. He obviously orchestrated the Kevin Durant trade. He blew up the team that went to the finals 4 years ago. I don't know, man. And then you're going to send out this memo. I thought he hired the GM to come in and be the actual GM, to be the shot caller, right? And Brian Gregory. So this he must just be the puppet, the Matt Ishbia puppet. He might be his doormat.
Yeah, that's literally what it seems like. It's just Brian Gregory is the mouthpiece for Matt Ishbia, which it's like, I don't know if we've ever seen. Oh, okay. It's like Jerry Jones is like the owner GM, right? Like they don't have a GM. It's just Jerry Jones. Like,
yeah, that's true.
So is Matt Ishbia, you know, yeah, did he just hire Brian Gregory for the optics? And that's one thing that Gregory said in his introductory press conference, is that kind of like me and Matt Ishbia are aligned, right? All the alignment, like we're marching in lockstep. We are on the same page. And like some people were like, well, does that mean you're just going to do everything that he tells you to do? Or does that mean that you guys have a good relationship where you'll actually push back on things that Matt tells you to do? Kind of feel like it's the former and not the latter. So it's all just very concerning with the Suns. And I'd like to distract ourselves with a team that's doing better than them, the Arizona Diamond. Oh, wait. Oh. I guess who's worse for wear right now? This is a good transition. Which team is more down bad? Is it the Phoenix Suns or the Arizona Diamondbacks? Might be a little recency bias that ties into this.
No, I don't know, man. That Suns season was abysmal. And then just the forecast of the Suns right now is so grim, where at least – the future of the D-backs, they have that young core. The owner's starting to spend money. I mean, obviously the Suns season, in my opinion, was a lot worse than where we're sitting right now. Also, I think there's what, under 100 games left. There's still a little bit of runway here for this D-backs team to figure it out. But man, are we down bad right now. And we're going to have to be crossing our fingers to try to hope that the Cardinals can at least throw a little bit of glimmer of hope into being an Arizona sports fan, because God, we just had to go through the Suns. Obviously our hockey team left a couple of years ago, the ultimate worst outcome. And then now this D-backs team with such high expectations, it's just, this team's cursed. The season's cursed. And it's just, we're in one of those lows, the roller coaster ride of being an Arizona sports fan. It's just unbelievable.
No, it truly is. I have a funny story about that too, with the Coyotes moving to Utah. They've officially become it's the Mammoths, right? The Utah Mammoths.
I think it's just, isn't it just singular, just Mammoth?
Oh, Mammoth, the Utah Mammoth. Yeah, I think you're right. I was on my ESPN app trying to catch the Diamondbacks game. I mean, you know how you like pick all your favorite teams? So you got like the Suns, the Cardinals, the D-backs, the Mercury, whoever else, and you know, ASU basketball. And then I noticed one of the little bubbles at the top was the Utah logo, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And
you delete it?
I did because it literally, if you were following the Coyotes, they just converted you to automatically being a Mammoth fan. And I'm like, I will not be a Mammoth fan. Hope all those guys are doing great. I'm glad they still have jobs and the team just didn't go completely defunct. But you know, sucks, man. Sucks. And now the NHL is talking about further expansion, and that expansion might not include a team back in the desert, which is just so sad. But yeah, with the Arizona Diamondbacks, it just feels like it's been a hit after hit, and the injuries are really, really starting to pile up here. Of course, we had Montgomery go out early in the season with the UCL tear, the needing the Tommy John surgery. Now we just got word that Corbin Burnes is on the IL for the season with the torn UCL, also getting Tommy John surgery. He'll be out the rest of this season, obviously, and majority of next season, if not all of next season. The recovery time for the surgery is 12 to 18 months. You know, it just depends on how hard the rehab is for these guys. Kevin Ginkle got sent down, but out of necessity, he's gotten called back up. Justin Martinez has UCL sprain, so not needing Tommy John as of right now, but that could change. Tallman, did you know that Justin Martinez had already had Tommy John surgery in his career?
Yes, I did, which, I mean, I don't know. It's, I mean, there's guys that have it multiple times, and they come back stronger from this surgery. So it's not, I don't know. I mean, just because you were watching the game last night where anytime a pitcher signals to the bullpen or signals to the dugout like that, and then he goes, my elbow, I don't know. I think we're going to get some news here, and I bet you Martinez is out. He's going to have Tommy John's again, just because remember he was already on the 15-day IL, and he already had discomfort in that throwing arm, the loss, the downtick of velocity. So it's not looking good, but I did know that this, if he does have to have it, it's going to be his second. And how old is the kid? I mean, I know we just locked him up for 5 years, 18 million. He's like 22, like, right?
25, three? I think.
I thought he was younger. Than that.
Oh, 23. Yeah, you're right.
23.
Yeah, okay. He's a young guy to have a second Tommy John surgery.
Like, that's rough.
Well, and then you got this other kid, Christian Montes de Oca. He's right now on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation. And Torrey, after the game, said yesterday basically the outlook was not good. Sounds like he's heading for an MRI. He's probably gonna need Tommy John surgery. Like, what? I know it's so common for pitchers, and it's like, what is going on in Arizona where every single pitcher is getting this and having this happen to him? Like, I was telling you before we launched the stream here, Tom, and I had an interesting stat for you, and you, this might not surprise you as much as it surprised me, but what percentage of MLB pitchers active in 2023 do you think had Tommy John surgery at one point in their career?
You said 2023, so 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, of active. Oh, shit. I'd have to say it's probably higher than you would guess, right? I'd say 47%.
Yeah, not bad. It's 35%.
35, wow.
Okay. So three and a half out of every 10 pitchers has had Tommy John at some point in their career. And like, it seems like that. I mean, I would love to see, you know, stats of the last couple of years or like year over year, how, what percentage that is, but that just tells you how common it is. If you have a one in, what would that be, like a 1 in 3 chance basically to be someone who's going to need Tommy John surgery at least once at some point in their career. And it's such a devastating injury as far as like how much baseball you miss. Like I mentioned, that 12 to 18 month recovery period, you're taking a whole entire season away from your career. And some guys can't come back from it. Like some guys literally can't. I know since this surgery was pioneered in like the 70s or whatever, before a UCL tear was a career ending injury, which it's good that we have the technology now and it's not. Hopefully, like you said, Justin Martinez can go on to have a good career, but it sounds brutal. If when you guys have free time, read a little bit about what the surgery entails. Basically they drill some holes and then they take a ligament from somewhere else on your body and they thread it through your bones around your elbow. Sounds gnarly. I don't know. Like science is crazy. The fact that they even invented a surgery like that is just absolutely remarkable, but yeah, just a very injured team right now. And then not to mention Kendall Graveman is on the 15-day IL with a right hip impingement. I don't even know what that means. Gabby Moreno took a ball to the hand on Friday, but it looks like he's back in the lineup tonight. Thank God. It's just, it sucks the most, I think, because it's all pitchers. Like we haven't, I mean, I guess take it how you will, good, bad, indifferent, like, knock on wood, I guess. Good thing none of our position players have missed significant time. I know Ketel Marte had missed a few weeks earlier in the season, but for the most part, our bats are at least staying healthy. And I think that's going to be what we unfortunately are going to have to lean on again, is this offense to be so stellar that they out-hit our terrible pitching. It's not a good outlook, man. I mean, are you excited about having Kevin Ginkle back up after how terrible he had been?
Well, he's better than that Brigham guy they trotted out there to in for Justin Martinez. Poor guy, dude. Oh man. And as you can see on the screen there, he got optioned down after his terrible outing last night. I mean, am I excited? No, but I mean, you gotta at this point right now with the people in that bullpen, you got to put all your eggs in the basket of Kevin Ginkle getting back to 2023 form, Ryan Thompson getting back to 2023 form, because we've struck lightning in a bottle before with some of these guys in the bullpen that have excelled above their expectations, like the two aforementioned names, and then somebody that we've added at the deadline. I mean, Paul Sewald, obviously he fell off the deep end, but we added a midseason and he was an incredible fit. He was the missing link to that bullpen to have us go on that long playoff run. So I think at this point, I mean, cause you look at that bullpen right now, some of these names they're calling up, you're like, who, what? And it's like, at what point is the well in AAA going to be completely dry? It's like, we're getting to that point already. So like you said, out of necessity, they brought Ginkle back up. And then you look at what Ginkle did in AAA. I mean, I think he pitched 4 innings, gave up 3 runs, had 5 hits. So he went, granted, I know it's pitching in AAA in Reno it's a hitter's league, right? You know, so some of these guys are not going to have great ERAs down in AAA, but it's like he only pitched 4 innings. And it's like he didn't even, I don't know, but I'm not super excited, but it gives me, I'd rather trot Ginkle out there rather than some of these other guys, because we've already tried it. And what we're about to have, what, 5 people on this team that are going to have Tommy John? You know, like that's, and then all these other injuries with the bullpen. And it's, again, I think our only option is we need to solidify some roles for these guys. Get Thompson back to the 7th, Ginkle as your 8th, and then Shelby Miller's got to be the closer, man, which is just the most insane just thing to process. Cause if we would have been told back in March, oh, hey guys, what do you think about, you know, June 10th, Shelby Miller is going to be the closer for this team, I would be like, you're out of your fucking mind. Like that's doesn't even make sense. Is Shelby Miller even going to make this roster, the opening day roster? But it just feels cursed, dude. It's like, it's one thing after another. It's like we just got smashed over the weekend, right? In Cincinnati. I mean, that game on Saturday, we lost 13-1. That was one of the worst losses of the season. Maybe outside of Brendan Faulk's meltdown against the Nationals. that's probably the worst loss.
Yeah.
Let me bring that back. That was the worst one. But even when you try to get a little, when you feel like this team's got a little bit of momentum and things might be turning around, maybe we're going to rip off, you know, five or six games in a row, or just two or three series wins in a row. It's just like, it smacks you in the face. Like the sweep over the Atlanta Braves. I mean, that absolute just unbelievable comeback in the ninth inning where we score seven runs to win 11-10. I mean, that was unbelievable. We had a 0.00 something chance of winning that game coming in down six runs in the ninth inning. And that team must have been ecstatic on the way going to Cincinnati. And then look at the absolute egg they just dropped over the weekend. And then to mention, you mentioned, thankfully, it's mostly none of the core guys. I mean, Corbin Carroll didn't play Friday or Saturday in Cincinnati because he had the quad tightness. Josh Naylor has been dealing with a shoulder injury, but that dude is tough as nails. He's becoming one of my favorite players. And we can talk about him in a little bit. If you saw, I don't know if you watched the post game. After this game.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to leave the sound on. But no, I didn't see the post game though. I obviously saw the grand slam. Yeah,
so I was going and starting to talk about this game, where it's like, cool, you know, we start out the opening game against the Mariners. You know, we had a pretty good game going together. You know, we're striking out, you know, striking out at the right time. You know, getting out the big hitters with bases, runners in scoring position. We're making the plays. We had a clean game, a shutout going into the ninth, and then. This game is almost like the perfect example of how the season's gone, where it's just another bullpen implosion. And then you could tell Josh Naylor was pissed after he hit that home run. The dude just hit a walk-off grand slam, but you could see deep down, he was like, we should not be celebrating this win because we were literally a strike away against four different batters from winning that game. And we just can't do it. So you could see the frustration and his tone and his facial expressions after the game. And then Perdomo came up and poured water on him. And obviously they celebrated at home plate like you do with a walk-off. But you could see some of those guys were not like, the fuck? Like, why did it get to this point? But you could see in Naylor's, just his body language. I mean, he just seems like an intense guy to begin with. But he was not – I don't think he went in that locker room and celebrated that like some of those other guys did. And good. You know, we need him to step up and be that leader. Like, we can't celebrate that. Why? What's going on?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. He's growing on me a lot. And it's tough because I think this is the only year we have him under contract. So if things go well, you'd hope that they look to re-sign him. I don't know that they have a lot of options at first base. I mean, you have Pavin. But this could – we'll get to talking about it if we end up being sellers at the trade deadline. Unfortunately, Josh Naylor is probably going to be a guy that ends up being one of those pieces. Here he was, though, in that post game.
Just trying to get a good pitch to hit. Try to stay off the ground. Got a good pitch to hit, stay off the ground.
What does a win like this mean for you guys after the kind of frustrating series you had in Cincinnati?
I mean, every win's big. You know, sometimes baseball's not going to go your way. Sometimes it is. Just roll with the punches. Have fun playing the game. You never know if it's going to be your last day, so just enjoy it. That's all I can really say.
What did it mean to be able to rally and get this one after that ninth inning and seeing Justin walk off the field?
Yeah, that was tough. But again, you gotta keep going. It was sad to see. We did our best to rally around him and get a win, and thank God we did. And
so, yeah, I mean, like you said, not the type of demeanor you would expect from a guy who just smacked a walk-off grand slam. And more to your point, you could see that frustration even during the at-bat where he had ripped a foul ball right down the right field line. And you could hear that it was great contact, but he, you know, adjusts his glove, calls for time, takes a few deep breaths, and I was like, man, he fucking ripped that. Like, if he gets a hold of one, and then at first I was like, oh, good, pop fly, we win. Because I would still would have won it if it was a deep pop fly. But it got over the fence. So it was like,
yeah, there's only one out. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh yeah, he absolutely smashed it. Granted, it didn't clear the wall by that much, but it was like you could tell he was like, fuck this, I'm ending it right now. I'm just gonna smash this as far as I can.
Yeah.
But I mean, you mentioned, I mean, the whole seller part. I mean, obviously Josh Naylor, he's the perfect rental player. You know, like, I mean, he's been one of the better hitters on this baseball team all season. I mean, he was clearly the MVP last night. I mean, he had some incredible plays at first base. I mean, just the work ethic that he's put in, where I'm sure coming in after the trade to the D-backs, everybody's saying, oh, well, there's no way he's replacing that defense at first with the exit of Christian Walker. Dude, he's been a stud the last couple weeks out in the field. And again, I mean, do you just want to talk about it? Are we going to be sellers? Are we at the current part right now? Or are we still talking about what went wrong?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the thing though. Like, I think the fans, anybody listening, they know how we got here, and there's no hiding from it. It's poor pitching. Our offense is fine. It's our defense is serviceable. It's just the pitching is bad. The bullpen is terrible, and the starting pitching hasn't lived up to expectations. Now the guy who was doing the best in starting pitching, Corbin Burnes, I mean, honorable mention Merrill Kelly, but Corbin Burnes was our ace, certified ace, and now he's gone. And so now you have Zach Gallen, who's been a shell of himself from what we've expected out of him the last couple of years. You got Brandon Pfaadt, who had the yips all of a sudden. He's doing great tonight through four. Starting the top of the fifth right now, scoreless. He got out of a tight jam there a little earlier in the game. And hopefully he finds his rhythm again. You know, we're going to have Ryan Nelson in the starting rotation. Erod's back immediately in the starting rotation. I think in his first outing back, he did, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think he did decent his first game back. He didn't absolutely shit the bed.
Yeah, he was good. Five innings, six hits, two earned runs. Three strikeouts. So
yeah, I'll live with that.
Hey,
yeah, the
puts you in a position to win the game, right?
Yeah, I mean, two runs, you would hope that our offense can outpace that, but then, you know, your starter allows two runs, and then your fucking bullpen allows six runs. So it's like, and I heard, I don't know if it's true, if it was just like a tongue-in-cheek remark, but I heard someone say that there was a game, I forget who was pitching. They were doing pretty decent. They were really in the game, and Torrey Lovello pulled whoever it was that was pitching, and the players were like, no, don't do that, because the second you put in someone from this bullpen, we're going to implode, and we're going to have a steep hill to climb if we get go down. And then sure as shit, it happened. I guess probably should have more information by bringing that up, but I think that's how a lot of D-backs fans feel, where it's like, we need a large lead, and then even then you don't, like, you would think a four-run lead going into the top of the ninth would be a money in the bag situation. But last night proved just how bad our bullpen is. So that's how we got here. Terrible bullpen. Very bad starting pitching.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the bullpen, it's so easy to just, you know, the main reason why it sucks is because of all the injuries. But I mean, being without AJ Puck, I mean, that has just been absolutely killer. Whatever's going on with Justin Martinez, we already talked about it. Something's wrong with that kid. And not having him has just been an absolute killer as well. Shelby Miller has just been the only consistent, I would say. I mean, Ginkel has lost it. Ryan Thompson's not the same pitcher. I mean, it's
you never know what you're going to get out of Jalen Beeks.
True.
He's had a few good outings.
He had a hot start to the season. I mean, Graveman, after Ryan Nelson shit the bed on Saturday, Graveman came in and continued to shit in the same bed. So it's there's not a lot of bright spots in that bullpen outside of Miller. And so the bullpen has really been the main issue. But you can't forget some of these games where this offense, I mean, just goes non-existent after the first two innings. I mean, we had a stretch there for a couple of weeks where it was like your starting pitcher goes six and two thirds, seven innings, gives up two runs, but we can't score more than two runs. You know, it's like we were so hot in the first inning. I know we're like fifth or sixth in baseball and first inning runs scored, but it's like for a while there, we were just nothing was happening offensively. The bats just went completely cold, completely silent, which thankfully, as of late, it's been a little bit different. In the last week and a half, it's been a lot different. I mean, prime example is that Atlanta game, that last game of that series in Atlanta, where we came back and won 11-10. But it's like, that's been absolutely one of the main causes too, where it's like, I mean, you would have felt like Corbin Carroll's batting over 300. His batting average got down to 250. And all, I mean, it's, and it seems like the guy hits a home run every single game. I think he's got 19 homers now after last night, but it's just, there's no consistency anywhere. Right. It's like, it's so we start the season, our starting pitching's great, but our bullpen sucks. And then now our starting pitching's falling apart. And guess what? Our bullpen sucks too, but our bats are somewhat good. Oh, what next? Our starting pitching is going to be great. Our bats are going to be cold. It's like all these things have to hit at the same time for this team to be competitive in this division. Cause I mean, I think last time I looked last night, we're still 5.5 games outside of a wild card. But if you look at how far back we are of the Giants, Padres, and the Dodgers, it's like, dude, we're left in the dust at this point if we keep going this route. But I mean, with the starting pitching though, I mean, I would have never seen the Corbin Burns, Tommy John coming, you know, at all. I mean, one thing he was known for is not just being great, but it was his durability. The guy was always available. He always pitched all of his games, every single season he played. And that's just, I mean, it's so easy as a fan to say right when that happened, you could have just probably put a couple nails in this team and said, you know what, it's done, you know, because that is just, it's so disheartening because the expectations coming in were so high. But then once you get that Corbin Burns news, I mean, I talked about the game in Cincinnati on, we lost 13-1. I mean, Ryan Nelson only made it 3 innings and he gave up 7 earned runs. So it's like right when you thought, okay, hey, at least we got Nelson, right? At least he can slide in. He can cover that up. Let's just pray that Rodriguez can come in, be somewhat serviceable. And then Nelson and Fott decided to just completely melt down at the same time. So it's the only thing we got here is Merrill Kelly, man, which he was a stud last night, absolutely lights out. And that's crazy. Merrill Kelly and Shelby Miller are the only two good pitchers on this roster right now. And it's mind-boggling that we're even in this position.
Yeah, go back 7 years ago and tell a Diamondbacks fan that Shelby Miller was your best pitcher. They would think we had a record like the Colorado Rockies do right now. And I thank God that's not the case. It could be a lot worse, but you're absolutely right about the division. The rest of the teams are running away with it. 5 games behind the Padres. I mean, I get we're 7.5 out of first from the Dodgers, which isn't insurmountable, but it grows increasingly less likely the further we move through the season. We're a little over a third of the way through this season already. I think we're about 35% or so, 36%. So a lot of baseball left, a whole lot of baseball left. The trade deadline is still nearly 2 full months away until we get to that point. I think we're looking at about 7 or 8 weeks. So a lot can happen between now and then. We saw them go on a 4-game win streak and we're like, we're so back. Then we saw them get swept and go on a 3-game losing streak and it's like, sell the farm. And it's good that, I guess, in a lot of ways, Mike Hazen and Derek Hall have kept a level head throughout the years, honestly, because it's not the first time we've been on this roller coaster with this team. They had a historically bad run last year as well, and then a really good run. Granted, they didn't make the playoffs last year either, so you hope that good run comes sooner and lasts longer. But like I said, their patience with Torrey Lovello, I think, mostly, and the fire Torrey crowd, I will get to that. We'll get to that. I knew we would kind of be all over the place, but Tallman, you did want to talk about the here and now and that trade deadline. I mentioned about 7 weeks away, 8 weeks away. Buyers or sellers? If things keep up like this and say we're 15 games out of first and we're 6-7 games outside of the wild card, this team's probably going to have to be sellers at that point, right?
Oh boy, I hope that's not what we're dealing with at that time. Cause yeah, I mean, if you're 7-8 games, and then it's all about, I guess, I don't want to say optics at the time, you know, going into that. I mean, if we're if we're starting to heat up and you're seven games out of a wild card, I mean, come on. I mean, you got to think about just the investment that's been made into this team and some of these players this season. I mean, so say this, so it's easy to say you're 15 games out of first place. Yeah, you're going to sell, right? Or you're 8 games out of the wild card. You should probably sell because some of those other teams that you're going to be fighting with, you can't compete with. I mean, I think the Reds just bounced us in the wild card. I mean, that's how – so we might even be looking back, you know, when we're talking about a week before the trade deadline, we might be looking back at that weekend series and going, remember when they swept us? You know, it's like that could come back to bite us. And it's the whole – you wrap it up and it's just like last season where every single game matters, where we missed it out on the playoffs by one game. But if you were to say the trade deadline started today, right, and I think we're still 5.5, maybe 6, or it looks like we might – let's cross our fingers – looks like we might be able to pull off another W here. So let's say the trade deadline's today. We're 5 games out of the wild card. Absolutely buy. I mean, obviously this team's not one bullpen arm away from just being dominant and going on a tear like they did after the All-Star break last season. But just the investment in this team, and we have a talented offense. And you're getting I shouldn't say you're getting – a lot of your good bullpen pieces back. You're getting one guy back for sure. AJ Puck's coming back. He started throwing at 120 feet. He's going through, progressing through his throwing program. So we're going to see him back. And then our homeboy, what's his name? The gambling addict that got suspended for a year.
Andrew Salfrank.
Salfrank, you're gonna yeah. See him back. I mean, granted, he's probably still two to three weeks out. If he can, they shouldn't let him go to Reno because he's not allowed to gamble.
So I think that's the funny thing is I did have an article queued up here about it. And I think he just within the last couple of days got back to AAA.
He was in the complex league. Yeah.
Option to the Arizona complex league. There you go.
Yeah. So he's coming back. I mean, that's a dude that he pitched in the World Series, man. And he gives you another left-handed arm out of the bullpen, which obviously we desperately need, and he gives you a different look and somebody that's got that major league experience. So I'm not saying, oh, the savior Salfrank's going to come back and save the day, but he could end up being a core piece to this bullpen. So I mean, at this point, I'm not fully there saying let's give up, we're going to be sellers. But I mean, dude, these next 5 weeks are incredibly important. And I think you said the Padres are 5 games back. I think we're playing this weekend the first time against the Padres, right? So we have a lot of games still against them. But it's some of these teams, it's like, I mean, the Reds aren't a bad team. That's not at all what I'm saying. They're a 500 baseball team just like the Diamondbacks. But we got to be able to beat some of these bad teams. Let's look all the way back to when they played the Rockies, when, man, they were – pretty damn rocky playing the worst team in baseball, where fucking Scottie Scheffler had more wins than the Rockies did in June. So it's like, you got to capitalize on these shitty teams because we just can't. We can't do it. Look at the Nationals. And then, oh, let's go play the Dodgers. Oh, we win 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers. This team is just, it's so hard to get a feel on exactly where this team's at, but we're shooting ourselves in the foot. But that's why these next 5 weeks are so important. And these games, I mean, we capitalized against the Giants. We did. I believe we won that series, if my memory corrects me. But these games against the Padres coming up, I mean, we got to start building some ground on at least one of those guys and just pray that they have a fall off like we are. But I'm not ready to sell, man. I'm not leaving. I'm not selling.
I'm not fucking leaving. No, and I hope that we can maintain and get healthy enough to where we are buyers. Cause if we're in a position to be buyers, then that's where we can get the help we need. And you're right. We're not one reliever away, but if you can go out and get a serviceable guy for the bullpen, maybe two and maybe one additional bat, I don't really know where you would put him necessarily, but it never hurts to have extra bats. Right. But the priority absolutely has to be on helping this pitching staff in any way, shape or form. If you want a silver lining and maybe a glimmer of hope, you have this tweet from Mr. Arizona Sports. The D-backs are tied for the fourth easiest schedule remaining in the MLB. It looks like 10 games against the Rockies, three against the Pirates. Now, I think this tweet is a little old, from June 2nd. Oh, not that old, June 2nd. But of course, we have a lot of division games with the good teams in our division as well. Look at this, 29 games between the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants. You get to play the Marlins, you get to play the A's, the Angels. But there's still some good teams. Like, I don't know how this is the fourth easiest when you got the Tigers, who are a really good team. You got the White Sox, who have been pretty good, right? The White Sox have been pretty good this season.
No.
Oh, maybe I'm mixing them up with Detroit. Yeah, because Detroit was terrible.
Detroit, I think they had the best record in baseball. Detroit did.
Yeah, I think you're right.
White Sox are second to last worst. They're 23-44.
Oh, perfect. So yeah, I was definitely
yeah, they're not good. But it goes back to what I already said, man. It's like, oh, sweet, we get to go play the Rockies. Okay, then we lose the series to the Rockies. Oh, we get to play the Nationals. Okay, well, they've scored 9 runs and we haven't even recorded an out in the first inning. What the hell's going on? Oh, let's go play Cincinnati, which, I mean, I bet you if Cincinnati was on our schedule, they'd be on the right side, not on the left side with the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Padres and the Phillies. So it's like, and then what's up with all these guys, all these bad teams? It's like there's always one player that just seems to like take our lunch money.
Yeah.
What's the guy on the Pirates, the Brian Reynolds dude?
Yeah, Brian Reynolds, yeah.
When we played they couldn't get him out. One of the games he went 4-for-4 and he had like 6 RBIs or some shit. I mean, it's, and then recently against the Cincinnati, it was this Encarnacion Strand guy.
He hit a home run in every single game, didn't he?
Yeah. It's crazy. And then when we play the good teams, it's like all their stars, we expect them to kick our ass, but it's like, and they kick our ass. And it was, I think it was Juan Soto was having a really terrible season. Mets come to town, play at Chase Field. Soto, he gets right against the team. It's like everybody gets right against us. And obviously that starts with pitching, because our pitchers have just been so gettable that it's like there's always one person that's just absolutely murdering us. And it's like, when are we going to have that guy that pops on our team, right? I mean, it feels like it's Corbin Carroll, but I already mentioned, I mean, his average is down. He's cooling off a little bit. I mean, the World Series year, it was Ketel Marte. I mean, after last season, what? Wasn't Gino was on an absolute tear after the All-Star break? It's like we need our stars to be stars, right? We need some of these guys to get hot and carry this team. Because it's when Carroll and Ketel are on, it's like you can't beat this team. Because, oh, our bullpen gives up 5 runs. Fuck it. We'll just score 6. Greg, that's not sustainable, of course. But, I mean, it's just worrisome. I mean, fourth easiest schedule, though. I mean, I'll take it. But like you said, how is it even possible when you're in the hardest division in baseball?
And I don't get, that's what I don't understand. Or I am sure it's just calculated based off, you know, how many wins a team has.
Win average. Like,
yeah. But what's funny is they say we have the fourth easiest. And if I just clicked away from it, but the Dodgers had the third easiest and the Giants had the second easiest. So it's like, how does that all that helps us do is maybe get into the wild card, right? Which, you know, we'll take it. That's what we've been saying since the winter, since the spring, is like, yeah, Dodgers are 99% probably going to win the division. We have to make it through the wild card. And we're lucky that the Braves are struggling a little bit. I think that was a team we were all kind of worried about. The Phillies are kind of up and down. But there's other teams now that we have to worry about, like the Cincinnati Reds. And, you know, if I do want to give them the D-backs, when I say them, a little bit of grace, and I don't want to make excuses necessarily, but it was a weird rainy weekend in Cincinnati. You had the game on Friday that was called in like the 5th or 6th because of the rain, and they said they were going to resume the next day. They came back out. Diamondbacks couldn't score a run. Alec Thomas misreads a ball and doesn't chase it down as we know he's capable of doing, and it bounces back by him, and the game was over at that point. Now it shouldn't have come to a situation like that, but so you lose game one, which is technically on the second day, so then you have to play another game after that. It was raining again. It was kind of a weird situation. I think they had a delay in that game too, but they resumed the game the same day. And then the next day. So it was just, it's kind of on again, off again, weirdness. So maybe we can chalk it up to that. Like, hey, maybe it was just a weird situation where these guys were just kind of thrown off their element, you know, throw it away and get back to it in the next series. And at least we won yesterday to start this one.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you heard any of the stuff. Torrey was pissed off about the conditions that they made him play in. And they were blaming on Gabby getting hit in the hand because of the wild pitch. He pitched where Gabby was expecting the ball to bounce, but it's soaking wet. The ball didn't bounce at all. And it just absolutely struck his hand. And the reaction that Gabby had after getting hit, you could tell. He like
pissed.
Oh, he was in some pain, dude. But yeah, Torrey was, he made some comments about that, which good. Like we're at that point where we need Torrey to be mad. You know, it's like, when is he going to start just lighting a fire under this team where, oh, he does it behind closed doors and whatnot. But like, I want to see some of it. Show us, you know, like let's hear it, you know, don't call some of your guys out, but call the team out. Fucking get over this stuff of, oh yeah, we lost, but I'm really proud of these guys. Like, that is just ridiculous. Right. Come out and you lose to the Rockies, and you're gonna say that they had some good bats, whatever, on that team. It's like, dude, come out and say your team is better than the team they lost to today, and that is unacceptable. Like, start calling out the team and force some of these leaders in that fucking dugout to stand up, because it's just, we're getting to the point where it's just every single post game show. It's Torrey, just level-headed Torrey, like he always is. But he's always – I guarantee you, probably out of, what, the 65 games they played, I guarantee you 45 of those games in the post-conference, he said he's been proud of that team. Where it's like, I'm not proud of this team. Are you?
No, and I don't think many D-backs fans are right now. And that's such a great point. Like, Torrey Lovello, he has an interesting managing style, and that really, we've talked about that a couple times. That comment he made after the Rockies game absolutely threw me. Saying they have a lot of good bats, like, sure, every MLB team has the best bats in the world, but compared to the rest of the MLB, the Rockies do not have great bats when you're talking about the level. So it's like lip service. It's like he's just giving like generic cookie cutter answers. And yeah, that's great if he's fiery behind the scenes. And like, you're right, he is saying he's holding these guys accountable. But, you know, give the fans something to where they're going to believe in you and not be calling for your head every third day and every time you let the team blow a lead. And I also wonder, Tom, and you played baseball as a kid. I didn't. We were on that softball team together, obviously much different, though. But I imagine there's got to be not necessarily a divide, but at some point, when does there start becoming animosity between the offensive players and the pitching staff, where these guys are going out there and putting up 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 runs, and then we're still losing because the pitching staff is totally inept and unable to close out games for us? At what point do the bats start, you know, looking at these pitchers and holding them accountable to be like, you know, that's where I'm kind of like back and forth on the whole fire Torrey thing. I do want you to answer that question, but where it's like, what is Torrey supposed to do when anybody he pulls out of the bullpen is going to fucking suck? At a certain point, there's nothing Torrey can do about that. He can't go out there and pitch for these guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I know what you're saying. Going back to your question, though, I'll be clear. When I played baseball, there was no pitching staff. Your best pitcher was like your best player. He also played shortstop. Like, I didn't play. Right. Yeah, I didn't play. But, I mean, just any... Even as an athlete, right, where anybody that's played team sports, where you're giving it your all. I mean, even at this current team, look at Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor won the game for us last night. Him and Merrill Kelly. You got to give Merrill Kelly a little bit. But just to use Josh as an example, it's like I'd be frustrated too, man. It's like I had to go out there and hit a walk-off grand slam because we had no one else to come in and get one out. I'm telling you, one out. Justin Martinez comes in and you're like, dude, he did give up a walk, but it's like he struck out too. It's like, boom, this game's done. I'm sure half the watching audience turned that game off because it's like, I'm going to bed. It's 9:15. You know, this game's in the books. And I can only understand the frustration that some of those guys, some of those position players that play every single day, where it's like you're doing your job, where for the most part, the position players are doing their job. We didn't talk about some of the defensive flaws that we've had over the past handful of weeks, which is uncharacteristic, again, of this team. Inconsistent defense is not D-backs baseball. But, I mean, just I can only imagine, you know, I mean, Corbin Carroll, he'd be the last person to ever say anything. I mean, the dude is like a choir boy. I mean, every time he talks in a anytime they interview him, it's like the only thing he's saying is the right thing every single time. Where it's like he's not going to be your leader, though. It's like the Josh one. Like, you look at him in the post game and some of his interviews, he doesn't look like the nicest dude. I mean, if those eyes were looking at me, I'd be like, I'm leaving because he's going to kill me right now. Like, you need that guy that's going to step up and say something. I mean, but when you get to the major league level, it's like it's two different worlds, though. I mean, there's a reason why the designated hitter is so big, because these pitchers spend all their time throwing the baseball. They don't go out there and hit like all these other guys. So it's hard to really, as a position player, to say, hey, you suck at your job, but I know you're a hell of a lot better than me because you're a major league baseball pitcher and I'm not, right? So it's, I don't know. It's, you got to, at what point does, like I said, someone's got to step up and say something. But then at what point do you look at the coaching staff too? And you look at the manager of the team who's supposed to be getting these guys all aligned, right, to win baseball games. So I'm sure there's a lot of frustration. I mean, that flight coming home from Cincinnati, I wouldn't have wanted to been on that airplane, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd imagine it was tense. And to your point, I know we keep kind of like circling around and bouncing from topic to topic, but it is kind of just telling the story of the Diamondback season so far. And I fucked with my mic a little bit. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, solid. And just like the frustration that it's been, and you mentioned Josh Naylor, you do want a guy that kind of has that dog in him, for lack of a better word. But it's almost like, you know, with him being frustrated, it's like if you're, you know, an everyday guy like us and you go to work and you expect to clock in for your 8-hour shift, and then one of your coworkers fucks up a project and now you have to work 2 hours of overtime and you get home late and then you got to go back to work at the same time the next day. It's like, yeah, it's a little different because these guys are playing baseball for a living, which is awesome. But yeah, you got what, an 11 inning game where you have to play two extra innings of baseball that goes to like 10:30, and then, you know, got to get back into, go home, get back into your routine, whatever. You know, it's hard for me to feel sorry for millionaires who get to play a game for a living, but at the same time, like, they're doing it at a very high level. And as we saw with Corbin Burnes, he's very particular about his routine and how he prepares for things. And when we were at the, I don't know if you saw, Tallman, but Nico took us to an event at Chase Field over the weekend.
Yeah, you guys were on the field, you bastards.
Yeah, yeah, we got to go down on the field and play some catch. Yeah. I met Baxter. Once I pass it over to you next, I'll see if I can pull up some pictures from that. It was a really, really cool experience. I ended up making him walk the full length of the whole field, which was really awesome. But when we were out there, you know, playing toss, Mike brought up a good point, is like, when Corbin Burnes got injured, he was asked to pitch a day earlier than he normally does, because they wanted to bring Rodriguez back, which meant they had to move Nelson back to the bullpen, I think was the situation. And Mike's theory is that, well, by doing that, did it somehow throw Corbin Burnes, who's very particular about how he prepares his body and his mental and his physical, could that have contributed to why his elbow wasn't like fully rested or whatever? I obviously don't know what causes a UCL tear, or if it truly might just be a freak accident thing, you know, ticking time bomb elbow type thing. But then my question was, how did Torrey convince him to pitch a day early in the middle of the season when he couldn't convince him to do that to start the season? Because that was the whole reason why Zach Gallen was even the day one starter, is because it should have been Corbin Burnes, but because of how he had pitched him in spring training, he wasn't ready to go for the opening day. So I think those are the types of situations where you can point at Torrey Lovello and kind of be like, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing, man? Like, and if you knew Eduardo Rodriguez was coming back, which you most certainly did, how could you not have better worked that into the schedule of, you know, Corbin Burnes place in the rotation. Why, as well as Ryan Nelson was doing, and as terrible as Eduardo Rodriguez has been this season, why not give Nelson one more start, you know? Why not roll him out there one more time? Burns is back on track, and then the next week you can bring Rodriguez back and move Nelson back to the bullpen if that's what you want to do. It's just those are the types of things I think where the criticism of Torey Lovello is absolutely warranted.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Torey botched the start of the season where, I mean, going back to the 20 different people that had a say on who the opening day starter was, it's like, bullshit. You're the manager of the team. Manage the team, right? Be the manager. Be the leader. But I don't know about the whole him skipping. Well, let me start with the Rodriguez coming back, getting his spot in the starting five. I mean, what a spineless act. I mean, so as the manager, and he said it before, he's going to put forth the lineup and the best rotation to win games as best as they can. Like, he's going to put the best guys, the best 25 on the field in that dugout to win the most that they can. But with this rotation, granted, what Ryan Nelson did over the weekend is not really backing up what I'm saying right here, because obviously he did not have a very good day, but sometimes even the best don't have good days. But coming in, Eduardo had like a 10-plus ERA, and Nelson just was pitching great. He was showing you that he should be the guy that got Eduardo's spot, and Eduardo should have gone to the bullpen. And the fact that Lovello, I don't know if it was on him or what, it's like, because if it's because Eduardo makes more money and there's more investment in him, that's bullshit. You know, you should have the best five guys in that rotation starting every 5 days, right? So that did piss me off. But granted, we didn't have to wait too long to really, you know, be upset about it, because Ryan Nelson's obviously in the rotation after the Burns injury. But from what I was hearing and reading, though, I don't think they moved him because what Burns came out and said, he said, I pitch every 5 days. And I think when they moved him up, I think he was slated to pitch the sixth day, but they had an off day, so which made it 6 days. I was trying to go back and look at the games and count it. But from everything I was hearing, you know, on the radio and reading, was no, when Burns actually went out there, it was actually the fifth day. So he didn't actually jump up a day and pitch early, which I would believe, because there's no way in hell I would ever believe that Burns or that Torey had control over Burns to say, hey, you're pitching a day early. Because you get him to pitch, there's no way. Like, those are huge red flags, right? That he had, granted, he's new to town, right? Corbin Burns coming in, and he said, you fucked up me and my, you know, my procedure and preparations to start, where he refused to start in that second game. So it's, I don't think there's any way in hell, based off of how the beginning of the season went, that Burns agreed to pitch a day early. But it's this tinkering, though. It's like, it's the little things that this team's getting wrong, and the little things that this management staff is getting wrong as well, where it's when you tinker a little too much, you get to that point where you're hindering the team, you're hindering the success. And I was trying to pay attention to your pictures, but I'm not.
No, you're sorry. I shouldn't have.
Not that good. But a viewing pleasure. I'm sure that was very nice. I did see a couple of it on the BSP Instagram stories. But
yeah,
I'm jealous. That's cool. I don't think I've ever been on the field before.
Yeah, it was the first time for me. I'd been on the warning track in the outfield before
when I was younger. Boy Scouts.
Yeah, exactly. It was Boy Scouts. Yeah, it's exactly what it was.
I do it.
But no, it was funny because I obviously, like, you've at least seen this part of the stadium, but this I was like, Tallman needs this like to cover his entire wall of his office. How do we get that in Tallman's house?
I'm gonna need a bigger office first.
Yeah, but it was really awesome. You know, Baxter's all of like 5'10", really a really cool mascot guy. Seeing the trophies up close, we all made jokes about snatching it and running off with it. Probably couldn't get very far though. The funniest story was Mike wanted to bring in a tripod to set up his phone and just, like, you know, have it going, filming us doing our catch and whatnot. And he gets to the metal detectors and they're like, you can't bring a tripod in. And he's like, why? Like, because you could use it as a weapon. And the lady in front of him brought in a full-sized MLB baseball bat. And it's like, so she can't use a baseball bat as a weapon, but I could use a skinny Amazon tripod as a weapon. And Nico was telling us about an event he had went to earlier in the season where they were actually allowed to take batting practice on the field. And people had brought in tripods for that event. So I don't know if they had an incident where someone got the shit beat out of them with a tripod or what, but it's just funny that they're like, yeah, no, a baseball bat couldn't be used as a weapon. Tripod definitely could be used as a weapon.
That's ridiculous. I'm pretty sure you can buy a full size bat in the stadium from one of the shops.
Oh, you can. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you can buy
the little
bats as well. Yeah.
Arguably.
If
you grew up going to baseball games and your brother beat the shit out of you with one of those mini bats, yeah, those are more lethal than a tripod and maybe even a full size bat. But that's ridiculous. Well, even the security's, I don't know. I mean, there's been a game where I forgot I had a water bottle in my pocket that's half drank. No one said anything. No one even knew. How do you not?
That's the thing. You don't even have to take everything out of your pockets anymore.
Like, yeah, but then my wife wants to go put her little tiny purse that should be small enough to bring into the stadium, but somehow it's not. She can't even put it inside a clear bag. Like, and the guy's going to have an absolute meltdown over it. Like, I don't know. I guess maybe that's just, it's a one-off experience with some of those people you deal with that, you know, I mean, come on. It's how many home games are there? They only work. Obviously, that's a part-time job.
81 games or something like that.
Yeah. So it's,
or no, it's 182. So that'd be 90, about 90 game, 91 games.
No, less than that. 80. Weird, dude. We're struggling right now.
Yeah, I think it's 91. Anyway.
No, I think it's 82.
Oh wait, there's 162 games. Not 182.
No, wait, not 182.
No. How many?
It's 160. Yeah.
Yeah, 162. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, it'd be 81 games, 81 home games. Yeah. So yeah, like you're right. It's a part-time job. They're probably have different understandings of the rules depending on what gate you're at and whoever manages it. I'm sure there's a lot of different reasons why. And it wasn't that big of a deal, but we got in, we took some pictures. It was a lot of fun, but that is a good point though about Corbin Burns, where he pitches every fifth day. It's not like he was asked to pitch early. And I think that does make sense. To what I was kind of bitching about earlier, where it's like he would have been pitching sooner at the beginning of the season, but the way days off are and the way series are scheduled, he was more on a regular pace and like that. His when he did start a day early, quote unquote, did fit into his schedule. So I don't know, man. I think a lot of people are just frustrated and looking for someone to blame, and Torrey is that guy. I think we're kind of wrapping up here a little bit, but do you see them moving off of Torrey Lovello either midseason or in the offseason?
Dude, that's a hard thing to really give an opinion on, because you got to think about the history. Like, how long has he been the head coach or the manager? Excuse me.
A long time.
It's been like eight years, right? No, longer than that. 8 or 9.
He was the head coach starting in 2017. So eight seasons. About
eight seasons, yeah. And then he coaches your team to a World Series, right? He totally flips the narrative around on Diamondbacks baseball, you know, where we're not perennially going to be a terrible team, right? You know, so, and you got to think about his relationship with the front office. It's like Mike Hazen with Derek Hall, the president. It's like, there's no way in hell, even if we're, like you said, 15 games out of first, 7-8 games out of the wild card at the trade deadline, there's no way in hell they fire him midseason. I would bet a house payment on it right now. There's no way. But if this becomes the cursed year, continues to be cursed, and with the absolutely high expectations coming in, the money that was spent on this team, if it ends in all-out failure at the end of the season, I don't know. I'd be more leaning towards you got to switch it up, because you remember they switched up all the secondary coaches, the bench coach, the pitching coach. The only consistent that remained was Torey Lovello, right? His whole staff, for the most part, except for the bench coach. I forget his name. He's been there with Torey forever. Doesn't matter. But I think if at the end of the season, it's like I would be leaning towards something's got to change, because you can't. It's the definition of insanity. You're going to run this back again. And, you know, because there's no way in hell that those front office guys, the couple of these instances where we've gone, what the hell? And Mike would say, that's Torey being Torey. Like they got to be seeing this stuff too, where something's got to change. Cause I mean, it's 8 years is a long time. And some of the records that Torey's posted at the end of some of these seasons, you know, for the most part, managers don't survive those records. Right. And at one point, are you past that honeymoon stage of, oh, well, he brought him to the World Series. That's going to fade after this season. You can't be going into 2026 and be like, but remember in 2023 when we were in the World Series and we weren't supposed to be, and how magical that run was because of some of the stuff Torey did. It's, I don't know. I'd be at the end of the season. I'm probably going to be close to that, you know, fire Torey camp.
Yeah, I mean, how well did it work out for Monty Williams getting the Suns to a finals appearance, winning two games, got him out of a job 2 years later, less than 2 years later. So it's tough, man, in professional sports. Like it's kind of like a, you know, you gotta win now, and some guys have more grace than others. But with the amount of talent on this roster, you just expect so much more from this team the past couple of seasons, and it has been very disappointing. And at a certain point, yeah, I know Hazen and Lovello are friends and they have a good relationship and we have some fond memories of Torey, but at what point have you made all the other changes possible, but you're still not seeing the results? At a certain point, there has to be a common denominator, and that might be Torey Lovello. I know they have, and maybe they try one more time and they roll, you know, some of the staff again. I know there's been a lot of trouble with the new third base coach waving guys through that shouldn't get waved through, stopping guys that shouldn't be stopped. I think it was Perdomo yesterday blew through a stop sign, made it home standing, not even a problem. Like, but he's sending through Suarez and Naylor, arguably the slowest guys on our team. I think I just saw Gambo post that, as of today's game, the Diamondbacks have been thrown out at home plate 14 times.
I heard that stat, yeah, which is crazy. And then I was also watching the game, and watching the game. It was in the seventh inning when Perdomo didn't even look at him. I had to look up his name, Sean Larkin. He literally put, and then the announcers too were like, oh, there's a stop sign. Oh, nope, Perdomo's going. And you're absolutely right. I don't know what the hell that was. Like he was safe by a mile. And that's just, again, that's some of these little things that this team is just not doing right. Granted, I think the next player up was Gino. I think he flew out or something, but then Lourdes hit a single to right center. So Perdomo would have scored anyway, but it's just like, what if that wasn't the case, right? You could have cost him a run. And that was a 4-4 game in the ninth. That run was extremely important at the end of the game.
Yeah, no, 100%. That could have been like the difference, honestly, which is crazy to think about. You know, there's a lot of coulda, woulda, shoulda with this team. I think if anything, maybe the pitching coach needs to be looked at as well, because, man, it's been tough sledding for them, man. But we'll see. We'll see if they can turn it around. I know you mentioned got the Padres coming up this weekend, Father's Day. After that, let's see if we can pull up a little schedule, give you a little sneak peek of what's coming up here. After the Padres, then we'll head over to Toronto, three games with the Blue Jays, then 1, 2, 3 games in Colorado against the Rockies. That is a great opportunity to build some momentum there. Man, that's a great 9-game stretch that I think is really going to tell us a lot about this Diamondbacks team. You got at Rockies, at White Sox, and then versus Marlins. I mean, 25 wins is what the Marlins have, 23 wins for the White Sox. Then all Colorado has like 15 wins, I think. Really bad team. So if you can't win I would say if you can't win seven out of those nine games, we're probably sellers at the trade deadline. I mean, under seven, over under seven wins. What do you expect?
Oh no, I'm with you. I would say over seven, even though it sounds like based off all the stuff that we've talked about, it should be under seven. But I'm going to stay positive. I'm going to stay positive with this team. And I mean, I would say this stretch is coming at the best possible time because we got to have some of our own get right games where we're winning 13-1, you know, not being one of those teams that, you know, what was it? We've in games where we've scored more than 10 runs. I think we've had four of them this season. We've lost three of them. We're 1-3 in games where we score 10 runs because the other team is scoring more runs than us. So it's like, we got to start beating up on these teams that are not as talented as the Diamondbacks because we're not living up to our expectations. We need those superstars to be the superstars, but I'll be watching. I try to watch every single game and I'll go over seven though for that nine game stretch because we need it. We have to win at least seven of those or our season's going to be in jeopardy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And only time will tell. Obviously it sounds like, you know, hopefully the injury bug has left the building and we can start getting the guys healthy that are going to be able to come back. It's crazy. We didn't even mention that. We touched on that Montes de Oca guy who's getting the MRI might need Tommy John surgery as well. Yeah, he didn't even pitch for the Diamondbacks. That was the crazy thing is they called him up, sent him back down, then called him up again. Then all of a sudden he's needing an MRI for elbow inflammation. So it's tough, man. It's really tough. But we're gonna keep, you know, everyone updated on that. When Mike comes back, you know, he'll share his piece. We're missing you, Mike. I anyone who's watching on YouTube right now saw that I just put the VSP logo up in the top of this video because that's something Mike always does when he's here. So things get a little off the rails, but no, this was a fun heat check live with you, Tallman. I love these one-on-ones, these, you know, the back and forth we get to have. It's not that we don't like having Mike here. That's why I love Pass the Outlet as well. Mike and I can just kind of do the two-man game on the basketball topics, but baseball is your, you know, probably strongest, if not second strongest topic. I know you're a big basketball guy, of course, but love talking baseball with you. But is there anything else you wanted to mention about the Diamondbacks or the Valley sports scene in general right now?
No, I think I'm exhausted, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. I would say baseball is my favorite. I don't know if it's my top, but it's my favorite. But you going to watch the U.S. Open?
Ooh, Scottie Scheffler?
Okay. Yeah, do you think he's going to win?
Maybe. He's won like two in a row, right?
I don't know if he's won. No, not the U.S. Open. I think DeChambeau won last year. Or are you talking about tournaments so far or in the past? Yeah, he just won. I forgot what tournament.
He just won one. Yeah, I thought he won two tournaments in a row.
Yeah, I think he did.
I don't know. Yeah.
But this is the major, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's plus 280 right now on FanDuel, which is outrageous.
Yeah, I might have to check that out. I might have to check that out.
Yeah, but yeah, if you look weekend, up. Right? Yeah, it starts Thursday. They're playing at Oakmont. Dude, the rough is like 6, 7, 8 inches long. It's ridiculous.
Well, I think I saw that. And I saw like the fairways were actually pretty thick too. I actually saw a clip where they had like 30 guys out there with lawnmowers trimming the rough. So maybe the conditions will be a little better. Where is Oakmont? Pennsylvania?
Sounds right.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
It's supposed to be real tough conditions. So it's going to be exciting.
I'll probably check it out. I mean, I'll be at the Diamondbacks game while that tournament's finishing up. So,
oh yeah,
I'll probably have to keep tabs on it. Yeah, I'll be at that Padres game Sunday. It looks like it'll be a packed house for Father's Day. Everyone wants their Father's Day polo presented by Budweiser.
Hey, they've had some good giveaways this year.
Yeah, they really have. Honestly, yeah,
quality shit too.
Yeah, like that replica jersey I got at the game last season, like. Even last year, the giveaways were pretty good, and they've done a lot more giveaways. I feel like as well.
It feels like every weekend there's one.
Yeah,
there's a home game. There's a giveaway.
Hey, whatever it takes to get people out to the park, I absolutely love it. But Yeah, thank you guys so much. If you've made it this far in the video or back on the replay, you're a real one. Of course, we have the video available for playback right here on our YouTube channel, Valley Sports Plug. You can also listen to the audio only version on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you find your podcasts for audio streaming. Make sure you follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, and so much more. Find all of our links down in the description below. But I will try and do this outro as smoothly as possible with the video transition. Mike will be back next week for another live stream. We go live every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. right here on YouTube. So make sure you like and subscribe so you can keep up to date and see when we're going live. But for VSP Tallman, I'm Chris Patrick, and we'll see you next time. Peace.